A little pre-show banter. I was a good boy. I waited for you.
Shocking, man. Didn't expect it. I said, I think I'm ready. Bam! There it went.
Yeah.
Well, it's not a bam. It's just that little...
sometimes it's got to be...
the little of the mouse. I'm like, I know what that is. I've heard that.
I know that sound. Welcome to Lyrics to Go, the podcast where we take a deep dive into lyrics that are questionable at best, but have largely dodged public ridicule until now. I'm Mark, and I'm here with Seth. How are you, Seth?
Yeah,
this is a show for...
Oh, yeah! How's your week? How's it been?
Good. I did the Hot Ones Challenge.
Oh, I saw the pictures online of you. It looked like... I think you had said in the post... I cried. I got a bloody nose. I had mixed emotions about hot sauce from that point on.
Yeah, well, I've never been a hot sauce guy. For anybody who's been living under a rock, Hot Ones is a show on YouTube that is done by this guy Sean Evans. 10 hot sauces that increase in Scoville scale from like 1,000 something to like the millions, I think. And in the show, they eat a wing and then talk about some stuff and eat a wing and talk about some stuff. And the episodes are usually like 20 something minutes. They just released one with Conan O'Brien, which might be the funniest and best one ever.
I haven't watched it yet, but I will be
watching
it. It's
incredible.
I already know about
it. It is incredible. So you can buy these sauces in a case. My friend Ryan Schlottman, is moving.
Thank you, John.
And John Capozzo and, I think, well, it was him, his idea altogether is to go and get some wings and toss them in these sauces. He had the 10 sauces from season whatever. So we all hung out and tried eating these sauces, and boy, it fucked me up. And at one point around the fifth or sixth sauce, I went to go blow my nose and blood came shooting out of it. I had to stuff a paper towel in my nose. And then I was drinking milk, and at one point, like, I kept drinking milk and then milk would like dab on my shirt. And then I realized that the paper towel for my nose was dipping in the milk and was getting milk on my shirt. Is like dripping from the paper towel on my shirt. I was a mess.
Bloody milk.
I had tears streaming down my eyes. It was nasty.
I wish I could have been here.
I'm not a hot sauce guy at all. I do not. I'm not a heat seeker like Nick Weiger on Doughboys. I am. I just like flavor. There were some good flavors, but holy shit, what a miserable experience. God damn it.
I'd like to think that I could probably do pretty good. I can handle spicy stuff pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty good at it. My brother, I've been in shock. I've sat there and watched him eat a habanero pepper like it was, you know, a cracker and walk away from it. I can't do that, man.
I'm sure if you build yourself up to it or whatever, you can do it.
Yeah,
but
it's really
weird. I do not hate myself enough to do the building up part.
I would take it as a challenge. I did have a very odd situation one time. Can we take a second to tell a very
sure.
quick story? Very sad,
yeah.
Fast. I went to a taco place here that had a multitude of different hot sauces, and you could go up. They were all in pumps, and I would go over and I would check them out. I would put my fingertip, my pinky fingertip, under each one, and I tried each one. And as I went down the line, I was like, "That's nothing. That's nothing. That's nothing." Got all the way to the end. By the time I got to the end, it was ghost pepper, and it said the hottest one. Took a little taste of it. All right, that's pretty hot. That's pretty damn hot. You know, I can. That's going to be a lot to take. And I was like, I should be careful of that. All right, so when I had my burrito, left with my family. We were headed down to Coconut Point. As we got down to Coconut Point, we were pulling up outside of the Borders bookstore down
there. My old
there.
Stomping grounds.
Yeah, exactly. Right in front of where I gave you a little dreidel like 12, 13, 14
And I
years
still
ago.
Had it there when I left.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's
but,
still there.
But I went to go walk. Before I walked in that Borders, I walked up and didn't even think
it is
about
it. It's a Books A Million, not a Borders.
I'm sorry. Books A Million.
Or and, no, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. It's a fucking, it's a Barnes & Noble.
It's a bookstore. And I went over there, and I was walking there, I was like, sorry, what the fuck's going on? What the hell's wrong with me? What's going, what's happening? Why is my face burning?
Uh-oh.
What the fuck? And then I didn't realize that when I pulled up in the parking lot, very, very quickly, for a microsecond, I picked my nose with my pinky finger. Just for a quick second. And I had this was like 45 minutes after the fact.
Yeah.
But Mark, that the remnant of whatever that ghost pepper had was still on my finger, and my nose burned like hot fire.
This is why we all wore gloves, because we were scared of this happening, and we were hearing stories of people who got frisky with their lady folk, or with themselves, and paid.
I ran the ultimate into price. That bookstore and said, "Where is?" At that point, it was a four-line fire. Went into that bookstore, said, "Where is the bathroom?" Instead of going to the bathroom, which were both occupied, men's and women's, I was willing to go in each one, but there was a water fountain there, and I'm just sitting at that water fountain, pushing one nostril shut, the unaffected nostril, turning the water on, and just snorting water up my nose. I turn back around. Half of the bookstore is standing there staring at me as I've got water all over my face and snot running down my nose. It's just absolute nightmare. I do have a question about yours. Did you when you did this challenge, did you have to eat the entire wing, or was it just a bite of the wing?
Just took a bite of each wing.
Okay, that's
I didn't have to eat the whole wing, so I did not.
That's interesting.
Because I one bite was enough. I mean, it was a chunk.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was not going to. The first one was relatively spicy. Nothing nuts, but you could feel it. The second and third, maybe even the fourth, did not feel as spicy.
Right.
The fifth had some kick to it. The sixth was very vinegary, and it was hard to tell whether I was experiencing heat from that or if the vinegar was kicking up heat from the previous one.
Vinegar can throw you off, man, I'm telling you.
But then 7, 8, 9, and 10 were, Jesus Christ, just
like
tears.
Like Mitchell of Omaha's Wild Kingdom, you're getting eaten up by that point. Huh?
I had a big old thing. I haven't drank that much milk since I was like 11. I had
gross.
To just sit with the milk in my mouth.
That's gross.
I mean,
I'm not
it
a
felt,
huge milk. I
neither
like milk.
Am I.
Yeah, I'm not.
I usually do almond milk or whatever.
Yeah.
But I needed it. It felt so good. It was like putting aloe vera on a sunburn. Oh. It felt so relieving just to have milk in my mouth, because that milk covers that capsaicin so well.
Oh.
Hell on earth.
I'm glad that you were able to deal with the pain. That sounds very painful. And how ironic, given the fact that the song that we're doing this week is audibly painful.
It's very painful. Yeah. We're not here to talk about hot ones.
We did.
We're not here to talk about burning noses.
Burning sensations.
We are here to talk about the 7 Mary 3 single, Cumbersome.
Yeah.
Tell me about, I could just picture you hearing this song when you were a young 42 years old back in 1993,
92. Continues episode after episode. I was a spry 54.
I almost said spry, but I just said spry last episode and we just recorded it. So what was your deal with this song?
I'm
hated it.
Picture for you, Mark. Come on. This song is positively shit. But I'm going to say some things about it a little bit later. You did ask a question. Paint a picture here. 1994, I'm working at a cabinet shop in Fort Myers, and they decide to turn it off the country station for a few minutes, and we have this newly started local radio station, 99X, comes on. They've been out for maybe a year, and this song goes on repeat day after day day. And the first thing that we need to address is that sometime around 1991, 92, this song came out before Jeremy. It was Alive by Pearl Jam. And I feel like from even though Jeremy was the big song, the one that kind of, you know, crossed all borders, in the rock and roll world, the minute that we heard Alive...
Not borders, Barnes & Noble.
That's right. The minute that we crossed that Books a Million, all of a sudden, every single rock guy in the world, be they guys from the 80s that were hair dudes or newly minted kids just buying their first guitar at Brent's Music, all of them suddenly had to sound like Eddie Vedder. I think we all know this story if you've heard it before. Immediately from that moment on, just about every single band in the 90s, they've made jokes about it on Family Guy, really annoying one actually, a joke that is. But that every band that you heard, every singer sounded like Eddie Vedder. And this band just took it to the stratosphere, that whole trying to sound like Eddie Vedder in Pearl Jam. And it immediately, I mean, it was like an immediate backlash amongst the Cooler Than Thou, which of course I was in 1994. I could not stand anybody that tried to sound. It made me not like Eddie Vedder for quite a while, or Pearl Jam. And that's sad, because they are good, and he sounded like that before anybody else. And they did do good songs, and I love Pearl Jam to this day. I still really enjoy them. I saw them in 1991 on the Lollapalooza Shore in Bayfront Park in Miami, just as Jeremy blew up. And it was an absolutely, it was one of the best shows I've ever seen. They were incredible. They were absolutely incredible.
You know, it's wild. I read something in something that I was reading while we were doing a little. Yeah, I read something while we were doing some research for this, saying that they caught a lot of shit for sounding like Pearl Jam knockoffs, which I didn't get that. I don't know why I didn't, but I didn't hear
like
that.
Pearl Jam?
Yeah.
That's all I heard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked this song.
You did?
As you know, we were both watching the music video, okay. And I knew the backing vocal parts, I knew the bass parts, I knew the drum parts.
Oh, I know them all too.
Now, I will say I'm not like a huge fan of it, and I don't like it nearly as much now as I did when I was 14 years old when this song came out. But when it came out, I was like, yeah, okay, like I get it. I think even as I started kind of getting older, I would listen to it and I'd be like, there were a couple things I didn't like about it. Like, well, we'll get into it when we get into the lyrics, but,
so hold on. Can we, I don't do this often anymore. As we're watching the video, which we're going to talk about a little bit later, I'm sitting there and I'm thinking to myself as I'm watching them play, that as I'm looking at the guitar player singer that looks just like, that to me looked like Paul Rudd in Anchorman playing Brian Fantana.
I can see that. Yeah,
exactly.
He's got that mustache.
But as I'm hearing the bass, which is kind of silly through the whole song. It's really a,
oh, I think it's a good bass line. I think it's more interesting than just following the chords, which is nice.
It's kind of a boring song in my opinion.
It is a boring song,
but I'm thinking to myself as I'm listening to the guitar sound, I'm listening to the bass sound, I'm listening to the drummers, the mix of it. There's other songs that have done these same sounds with these same mixes that I've thought to myself, I love that guitar sound. I love that bass sound. I like the way they did the drums. I hate the vocals. I can't stand them. But the other things I'm like, I should not hate this as much as I do, because there's plenty of other songs that have that same guitar sound that I love a lot, a la Fastball.
Mm.
Fastball uses that guitar sound.
Well, I can't stand the guitar sound in the beginning of this song.
Really, you don't?
It's too twangy. I like the distorted guitar sound.
Yeah.
But in the beginning,
I like that chimey.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it doesn't cool. do it
like
for me.
Like that twang.
Does not do it for me.
Or I should say, I like it now more that I am able to look past my initial hatred that I've held on to for 30 years, you know.
We're letting go here at Lyrics to Go. We're learning to let go.
We're changing our name. The process of letting go.
Nothing bums me out more than having a band like this that had one hit or a couple hits in 1994. You could argue that Water's Edge was another hit to an extent. They also had a song on a couple soundtracks, including the song Wait, which was on the soundtrack for Crazy Beautiful. Then reading, 7 Mary 3 is an American rock band, which means that they are still functioning. They are not 7 Mary 3 was. They still is. And we can get to that here in a minute. They formed in Williamsburg, Virginia, the College of William and Mary. Jason Pollock and Jason Ross, so two Jasons, 1992. Got together, found a bassist named Casey Daniel and a drummer named, I don't know how to pronounce it, Giddy Kalsa?
That sounds good enough.
The group name comes from the TV series Chips. 7 Mary 3 was a call sign for one of the officers, John Baker, played by Larry Wilcox. Mm. Quote, there's no great significance or anything. Of course not, because it's fucking...
Did you ever see Chips?
Yeah.
Poncherelli?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Eric Estrada.
Eric Estrada, there you go.
We were just tired of trying to think of a cool name. Well, you failed. I mean, it's not a very good name anyway. And then, you know,
you got it all wrong. See, you work on something better. See,
chose something that has a stupid fucking story as well.
It is.
They put out an album called Churn, self-released in 1994.
I always read it as Chum.
That's fair. It could be Chum.
Yeah,
it could be. Ended up, you know, I always thought they were from Florida.
I
initially.
Did too. I heard that I heard this longstanding thing that I've thought for years that they were from Altamont Springs, which is right near.
Right.
Orlando.
Which is probably, honestly, I mean, it's one of those things where people say, you know, they're from Chicago, but they're really from a small city right outside of Chicago or whatever.
One of my favorite bands, Home, universally at this point known as a New York band, however, from the dregs of Tampa.
Yeah. But yeah, okay.
Sorry.
No. I was just, yeah. I sound like the chorus of the song. No. So, kind of an interesting story, I guess. You know, they're in Virginia. They self-release an album. It's got this song on it. They send it out to a bunch of radio stations. Yeah. And one station in particular gets a pretty high listenership, and it's in Orlando. So what do? They fucking move in 1995. They all just pack up their shit and move from Williamsburg, Virginia to Orlando, Florida, where they have a bunch of listeners.
Do you know how weird that is?
It's very weird. That's... But I mean, what a great idea, right? So, it's like find where people love your shit and go to it.
But if you're from Florida, which I am, and you are sort of, mm-hmm. I mean, you were born in Maine, but you've spent the better portion of your life in here. If you're from here, you know that people that are from here are just dying to escape. You know, when you get out of high school or college, you're looking for another place. I think that's changed. But in 1993, 94, everyone I know was trying to figure out a way to get the hell out of here.
Well, I think that this is the truth, is that when people always want to move from where they're born, at least. So you had a bunch of people who were from Florida who were trying to get away from Florida. But I think people that were born in Williamsburg, Virginia, were trying to get out of Williamsburg, Virginia. And people that were from, you know, I think there maybe are a couple big cities that don't follow that trend. But if you're not from Chicago, New York, LA, you know, Boston, a couple of other places, you're probably like, I want to get out of this small city. I want to get somewhere else.
So any one of those places that you just mentioned is a destination for musical success, I would guess. Even Boston, more New York, Chicago, LA, right? That's what we think of is, you know, you're going to go to a place where you can grab a lot of people's attention very quickly in a short amount of time. Backing up for just one second, I was going to immediately follow it up with, 1995 Florida was not the destination for growth that it is today. This was not what people today I don't know exactly at this moment how the rest of the world feels, but with the growth that we've seen where we're from, you get the feeling that people are going, I'm dying to get to Florida. This is a place where I can go and grow, where things can be great for me, where opportunities are. I just don't feel it was the same thing in 1994. It was different. It didn't feel like that
so,
back then.
No one is saying that they went to Orlando because it was a place for growth. They're saying they went to Orlando because, I don't know how many listeners it was, but they were blowing up in Orlando and not in Virginia. So you go, you strike while the iron's hot. Now, I mean, if it's enough people that were listening to move the fucking needle, no one's saying that Orlando had to be the last stop they went. And I don't know if they're still there to this day. I mean, they probably are. They
can't get out of this place.
Once you're here,
yeah.
You're trapped.
I would like to say, finish this.
Well, actually, I know they're not.
They're not?
Because, yeah, I know they're not. Because Jason Ross, who was the head guy, ended up taking over the Bowery Presents, one of New York's most powerful music production companies. Oh. So he is now the head of that. And I mean, I've seen stuff of theirs for a while. I was kind of surprised to see that he does that. So he probably lives in New York now.
Okay, that makes
so,
sense.
So, I mean, it's just a case of like, where is our listenership? Our listenership is in Orlando. Well, we're in fucking Virginia. So let's just go to Orlando where we already have a bunch of fans.
Okay.
And it worked out for him, right?
I mean, it did. He's working in music. He's got a career in it. It's happening.
This band released 7 albums.
Yeah.
And one of them went platinum. They were on a fucking soundtrack for Crazy Beautiful.
That qualifies as success.
Yes, it does.
Now, also with finishing all this out, yes, they did. They came to Florida. And I also have to say that within 3 years, by the 1996, 97, every band sounded like this. Just about half the bands that you heard on the radio sounded like this. And every band that you heard in Florida sounded like this. So they were essentially what I would call the quintessential 90s band from Florida.
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't from Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the music video is very Florida as well.
Oh, my God. We were watching it, talk about that.
Yeah, man. I got homesick and I live here.
I did. I totally. We're going to talk about it at the end.
So 1995, they move here and they release American Standard. Basically, from what the Wikipedia article says, that their regional success in Florida caught the attention of Mammoth Records and basically ostensibly re-recorded all the songs that are on Churn plus 2 other songs. Released that in 95, album went platinum, Water's Edge, as I mentioned, as well as Cumbersome, ended up becoming their biggest hits. I mean, Cumbersome was just about everywhere you fucking looked, whether you liked it or not. Number 7 on the Modern Rock Tracks, number 39 on the Billboard Hot 100, and on their list of hot mainstream rock tracks of the year, the song ranked in at number 5 for the year of 1996. People loved it, whether you don't or not. It's one of those songs that just was everywhere you didn't want it to be if you didn't want it to be anywhere.
You heard it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Jason Pollock said the overriding theme on the songs from the whole album is, quote, one of people dealing with things in life, dealing with your feelings, dealing with your fellow man, dealing with women, and how you really have to work at it.
Wow,
Jason, thanks for the deep analysis of the songs from American Standard.
Yeah.
I don't know how it gets any more serious. And
I wonder if he's related to Jackson Pollock.
Probably
not.
Yeah, Jackson Pollock, who made the rug in the Family Man video. A prominent bass line is highlighted during the bridge.
It's so bad.
Do we want to talk any more about this before we get going?
No. Not really.
The drummer did call the song a blessing and a curse. He added, it definitely was the beginning of our success. We were able to sell a lot of records because of that song and a couple of others on that first record. But at the same time, with each record that we've made, it's like the monkey on the back. Their second album did sound drastically different. It was more of a folky sound. I don't know what it is that caused that, and I'm not going to read.
What was the name of that?
That Rock second album? Crown, I okay. think it was That's called. Weird. And, pretty much everybody that they had won over by doing Cumbersome and Water's Edge and doing that kind of like rock thing. And it may have been because people were comparing them to Pearl Jam and they were trying to differentiate themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But basically people said, okay, I'm fucking done.
So guitarist Jason Pollock leaves the band and then they release this album called The Economy of Sound. Which is kind of strange to me. What are they, freaking the Minutemen all of a sudden? I don't know. They really didn't do anything after that. One thing I do have to talk about is that this album, American Standard, was recorded at Morris Sound Recording Studios. It is a recording facility in Tampa. The building is still there. It's right off of Fowler Avenue, right on the corners of USF as you're coming off of
I-75.
Morris Sound, mainly known for popularizing and recording Florida death metal bands.
I think that we talked about
Slowly We Rot was recorded there. Death's Leprosy was recorded there. Sepultura did albums there. It's a really, really important studio, and everyone recognizes it as a rock and death metal studio, and it was, but it was more than that. There were actually a lot of gospel records that were recorded there, because it was a studio. And you know, if you come in and pay, you're not just going to, he's not going to specialize, oh, you can only be a death metal band playing here. If you're trying to make music and you're going to give him money, guy who owned it named Tom Morris, he's going to take your money. And he did, from one guy named Larry Ford, who recorded a record there back in the 80s. He knew him. I think that's, it's a cool place. I pulled up there with my wife and daughter, a few years ago.
Your father released his only death metal album there, right? A pus-filled cunt.
That was the...
aching vaginal discharge.
Immediately followed by taken directly.
Penile decapitation, the Larry Ford classic.
Immediately followed by pulled from the cross. Oh,
incredible.
God, yes, it incredible. Is incredible. Mark, let's talk about these lyrics.
Please. All right. So we get that chimey guitar in the beginning, and then we get some true 11th grade poetry. She calls me Goliath, and I wear the David mask. I guess the stones are coming too fast for her now. You know, I'd like to believe this nervousness will pass. All the stones that are thrown are building up a wall. God, these lyrics suck. It feels good. Let me just say, Seth. It feels good to just do a song with some dumb fucking lyrics.
It does. We've done so many that were deep.
Yes, we've done so many that are deep. Did you know where this comes from? We found out that it's better than we thought. You know, the story behind. This is just some good old-fashioned dumb fucking shit.
Mark, you're not a church-going guy.
I'm not.
I don't think you ever were.
I was.
You were?
I went to church camp 2 years in a row. Oh my great God. Uncle was a hugely religious guy.
Wow.
My dad's side of the family was very, very religious, and his sister still is extremely religious. Mm-hmm. I did go to a church right up the street from my old house, and I went to youth night, like Awana.
Right. Yes. That's Baptist
for
right.
a while. Mm-hmm. And, it wasn't for me. I just realized very, very fast. I think I asked my pastor once, if people have to be saved to go to heaven, then what happens to babies when they die?
That's a good question.
And they said they don't go to heaven. And I was like, fuck this.
Yeah.
I was like, that sucks.
Oh, 30 years of, you know, you're not here, you're going to burn in hell.
Yep, yep. Yeah. And I was just like, I'm out, hard out. Any God that would do that to a baby, I'm not in. Now, I'm sure there are, you know, when you start getting into the segmented Christianity,
the crack.
I'm sure that there are some that are like, yeah, no, they go to heaven.
We're here to give the babies a break. Yeah, we're just gonna.
But you know, he was like, well, that's why there are missionaries who go around trying to, because I was like, well, some like 7-year-old kid or 8-year-old kid who's never learned about Christ,
right,
who can't be saved,
right?
Then what happens? He's like, well, that's why missionaries are so important. But
a
I'm like,
good one is like, what if a 7-year-old is trying to save a drowning 5-year-old? Never been to church, never been saved, but in the process of saving the 5-year-old, he drowns. Does he go to hell?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
And that sucks.
Isn't it insane?
I'm out.
Yeah. It's
hard out.
It's kind of nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Saved by grace there, Mark. So she calls him Goliath, and he wears the David mask. So I guess, is he conflicted about who he is, Mark? Who is he? Is he the bad guy? Is he the good guy? Is he the tall, lanky, vicious overlord? Or is he the young guy just wanting to take
out? You think Goliath is lanky?
Probably, yeah. He had long arms. I always saw him depicted in the pictures as long, bulky arms. You know, he's very tall. He was reported to be 10 feet tall. Is he that guy, or is he the short, ruddy-haired David with a sling? Which one is he? Is this a matter of he's conflicted about what he is?
Well, I mean, yeah, he says that I guess she's... this first line, I guess you can take it as that she is saying that he is the Goliath, but pretends to be the David. I guess I've always read that as she calls me Goliath, and then from his viewpoint, I wear the David mask. Mm-hmm. But apparently she is telling him that he pretends to be the David when he's actually the Goliath. Which,
oh, no.
No mask is going to help you.
He's pretending he's the Goliath when he feels he's the David. Do you think that's it? she's telling him.
No, I think that she says to him that he's the Goliath, but he wears the David mask.
Why are we talking about this? This is so insane.
But the
really great part, Mark, is that we get to watch the verbal crowbar of the biblical story juxtaposed onto the veneer of their relationship. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
It's so stupid. I guess the stones are coming too fast for her now.
Yeah. He's nervous, says the genius annotation. He keeps saying and doing all of the wrong things, and he knows she isn't going or looking to keep forgiving his mistakes. She can't keep up with his follies, and they both know there's plenty more to come.
Are the stones his nervous speak? I think they are.
Maybe.
Yeah. They're like, he's so nervous around her, you know, that he's just, everything's all stuttery and it's fast and he's just throwing these ideas out there and they just seem to keep coming and he doesn't know what's going on. I want to tell you so much about what I'm feeling, but the words are all wrong.
So I guess the stones are coming too fast for her now.
Yeah.
Sounds like that she's getting the stones thrown at her when David was the one who threw the stones. So it sounds like he's calling her the Goliath.
It's a big mix-up, Mark.
We don't know who's the David and who's the Goliath.
It's a big mix-up.
All we do know is that those stones that are being thrown, I guess, at Goliath, where she is Goliath and he's David, she's using those stones to build up a wall, and we're trying to make some kind of clever analogy where, like, the stones that are throwing are building up a wall where one of them is cutting the other one off from each other. But this is such a messy metaphor that it's kind of hard to tell who really... We know that she is calling him the Goliath, but that's all we really... That's all we're really fully
sure
of.
Her. Yeah. Mark, shitty basement apartment in Rich, somewhere in Virginia, 1992. Guys are hanging out, sitting around. One guy, maybe Jason, is sitting there. One of the Jasons strumming his electric guitar. It's not plugged in as the rest of the group is drinking Miller High Life. And Jason Ross walks in and goes, guys, do you think Eddie Vedder would say, I guess the stones are coming too fast for her now?
So we're like, yeah,
is that something
good.
Eddie would write?
Yeah, that sounds... As they take a big bong rip.
Right.
Yeah, that sounds kill.
Shitty
that
Virginia
sounds killer.
Weed. Weed's a lot better in Florida. We need to send a tape.
Absolutely. So then we get the chorus.
Mark, the stones are building up a wall.
Oh, yeah.
It's getting bigger.
All those stones that are thrown are building up a wall. Someone's building a wall. Who? Not entirely sure. It seems like the genius annotation, everybody seems to think that it's her.
Yeah.
That he is the one that keeps fucking up. Now, someone is definitely fucking up. Maybe we'll get some more insight. The pre-chorus gives a little bit of it, I guess. I have become cumbersome to this world. I have become cumbersome to my girl.
I love how he conflates this relationship that he has with this one person out of 7 billion on the planet with the rest of the world. Look at the weight that I am, how much I bear down on this planet.
Yeah, this sounds like a suicide note at this point. Cumbersome, hard to handle or manage because of size or weight. It sounds like a Goliath to me, huh?
Can he light your candle?
I mean, a Goliath is hard to handle because of size or weight.
Yeah, he would be.
So I don't know if they mean like emotional weight.
Why didn't he write about cutting Goliath's head off? That would have been cool. Would have taken a death metal turn.
I want to know what it is he's done.
Because that's what David did in the story. I don't know if you know that or not.
What did he do?
It went, well, do you know the story of David and Goliath?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's an army, two armies. David went out there. He was clothed in armor by the king. He said, forget that. He left the armor behind. They said that you send out your champion. The champion of the Philistines was Goliath. He was 10 feet tall. He was impressive. He was huge. And this little guy walks out there with this armor on, and he's really small and he's ruddy. They described him as ruddy. He's got red hair, and he goes out there, and he's the champion of the Israelites or the Judeans, right? And he goes out there, and he had gathered up these stones in a river that he thought were very nice. But he gets out there and he sheds the armor, and he says, the only armor I need is God. And then Goliath's sitting there and he's growling at him, and he puts one single stone in a sling,
and then
he puts it over his head, wham, nails him right between the eyes, kills him dead All the Philistines are shocked. He walks across the field, picks up Goliath's own sword, chops his head off, and lifts it above his head.
And then
looking
fucks
at the
hole.
Biblically.
Famously.
Yes, exactly. So if he had put the story, you know, about, you know, I chopped her head off, it would have been a much better song. Let's just get to
Let's that. Pretend that let's that's just what he means. Yeah, so I, you know, to say I have become cumbersome to this world, and I have become cumbersome to my girl, we don't really know what he has done. It sounds like he was not, and now he is. And I don't know what has made him become cumbersome to this world / to his girl. Mm-hmm. But it seems like something has happened here where, you know, she is done and the world is done and the world is a worse place because he's in it.
I know what's going on, Mark.
What's that?
He's bearing the weight of the 90s. I don't know if you know this or not or remember, but the
a heavy decade.
Yes. Not so hair metal anymore. Nirvana came around and all of a sudden things got deep and heavy. And he's bearing the weight of all of the social problems and the musical mores of the time. They're bearing down on him.
Yeah.
Jason.
Poor guy.
Yeah.
Verse 2. I'd like to believe we could reconcile the past. Resurrect those bridges with an ancient glance. But my old stone face can't seem to break her down. She remembers bridges, burns them to the ground. Jesus.
Yeah, just
sounds like a sweetheart.
In. Yeah, really. He's in love. How many times have we heard in pop songs, and let's face it, this is Please Come Back to Me.
To be fair, I say she sounds like a sweetheart, but who knows what this fucking dipshit has done.
He's probably ain't shit. Probably ain't worth his salt. I don't think. I'd like to believe we can reconcile the past. Please come back to me. I mean, there's no more common line in pop music than that right there.
It's another thing he's trying to do with this. Mentions,
very badly put.
Mentions resurrecting bridges and then also talks about how she wants to burn the bridges. Just like the stones that were thrown were being used to make a... This guy's very into architecture. This guy must have... Maybe went to a school in Virginia for engineering.
He's into history too, Mark.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all everything here is from the past, resurrecting things, ancient glance. Nothing's new.
Yeah.
There's nothing new under the sun, Jason.
Once they get back together with her, realizes that he did something to fuck up or whatever.
His face is old. It's old.
I don't know. Resurrect those bridges with an ancient glance. The fuck does that mean?
You don't resurrect a bridge, you rebuild it, Mark.
Yeah, but
much
with
like you
with
don't
an
play,
ancient glance?
You don't play a mamba. You don't resurrect a bridge.
Yeah.
You rebuild a bridge.
Yeah, you resurrect someone who's dead.
And you don't do it with an ancient glance, you're right. You do it with sweat and nails and string and spit.
You don't step on Superman's cape.
And you hope...
You don't spit into the wind.
That a barge doesn't run into it.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Too soon, Mark.
I don't know when would be a good time.
I don't know.
But my old stone face can't seem to break her down. Gee, I wonder why when you call your face old stone face, that doesn't have any emotional wear on her.
Mark,
I wonder why.
Funny, that was his nickname in elementary school. Hey, old stone face, want to play Foursquare?
So yeah, no shit.
And why would you want your stone face to break her down? That sounds bad. You're trying to say that you're trying to break her down. Mark, wake up.
I'm awake.
Shit one. I'm trying to keep us up. Break her down. I think he's trying to say that break her down, break down her defenses, try and get back at her heart.
Yeah. But she remembers the bridges, burns them to the ground.
It doesn't sound good, Jason. I'm trying to break you down. Well, then I'm leaving. No. By breakdown, I mean I'm trying to get back at your, you know, get to your heart. You know, try and break down your walls, your defenses, you know.
Those walls that she built with the stones that were getting thrown too fast at her now.
Wait, he threw those stones.
I'm not sure who threw the stones.
Let's just keep going. Let's go. She likes to burn bridges.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, you
That's
know.
It's a thing for her.
Look, I guess, yeah. there's nothing wrong with burning bridges for people that have done you wrong. Trust me, I know. But I will say, that I always have a problem with people that are like that get off on the idea of I keep my circle small and fuck bridge. I'll let the bridges that you burn light the way. It's like, calm down. Yeah. Like, you know, I don't know what Jason's done here, either of the Jasons.
Small. Yeah. Work on that.
Yeah.
Be a more people.
Yeah.
People like them.
I've always said human beings are a pack animal.
Yeah.
If you find someone who like wants to be a loner all of the time, there might be something wrong with that person.
You don't get joy from being alone. You just don't.
Yeah.
As much as people like to think I'm a loner.
And I get it that being, you know, a loner to an extent is safer or can be like more contented because, you know, your life ends up having sometimes a lot less strife and shit in it when you don't have a million people in it. But I mean, at the same time, again, we're supposed to want to be around people.
That's the way it works. That's the way we were designed, whether you like it or not.
I have become cumbersome. I'm not doing this every fucking time Jesus Christ.
No, just go to the chorus.
So that's the pre-chorus. So now we get to the chorus. Yeah. Which, oh my God, this fucking chorus, Seth.
You're trying to say you love it, Mark. I get it.
Yeah, boy.
Trying to tell me to express all your feelings.
Yeah.
Like Jason.
Let's hear from Jason in the 10th grade.
The book of Jason.
Writing in his personal diary. Too heavy, too light, too black or too white, too wrong or too right, today or tonight. Cumbersome. Too rich or too poor, she's wanting me less, and I'm wanting her more. The bitter taste is cumbersome. No, yeah, no, no, no. No, 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 yeah. Which the fuck is it?
You're giving me the impression that this song doesn't know which direction it wants to go.
No, this, no, yeah, no. No, 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 yeah.
No, no.
Yeah, no, no.
No!
Hold on.
What do you want, Jason? Is Goliath home? She doesn't want to see you, Jason. I wrote her a poem. Can I play it? Can I read it for you, Miss Goliath? It goes like this: too heavy, too light, too black, or too white,
too wrong,
see what
too
I did?
Right.
See what I'm... Can you imagine Goliath's parents
today or tonight
having to deal with like shooing him off the porch like a raccoon with a broom,
like a unpoisonous snake?
Oh,
yeah,
like a black racer that could go in the song. That could be there.
You know, and this to me is one of those, like, a guy who thinks that what a woman is asking for is perfection when really she just wants him to do one of two or three different things to not be a fuck up.
Yeah.
And have that be that, where he's like, you're just, there's always something wrong. I'm too, well, too heavy. I'm too light. I'm too black or too white. I'm too wrong or I'm too right today or tonight. And she's probably like, can you fold the laundry? And he's like, God, I can't do anything right, huh? I'm getting a lot of gaslighty vibes.
Oh yeah.
From this guy.
I totally feel like whoever this girl is in this song completely never came back and got it from the get go. I mean, she just looked at him and said, you know, you couldn't take the hint when I burned the fucking bridge.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and completely got it.
Too rich or too poor. Yeah. Just throngs of people saying, yeah, he's just too rich.
Mm.
God, I just wish he was less rich.
He's so rich, he's moving to Altamont Springs.
Yeah, too black or too white is also a little bit of a problematic line.
Mark, just throw a couple more of those color references in there, Jason, just so we can use them on future episodes, please.
Yeah, I gotta love that light, white, right, tonight rhyme scheme.
Fucking Eminem.
Yeah, and too rich or too poor, she's wanting me less and I'm wanting her more.
Mark.
Well, take that as a fucking hint, man.
You should have. No, yeah. That was the thing when we were watching the video and I was paying attention on the lyrics, is all the no, yeahs, the yeah, no's, and how he just contradicts himself as he just, I mean, word after word is just, where are we going? Where are we going? No, yeah. Can't make up his mind. There's no definition other than he's cumbersome. He's trying to catch a feeling of the time, doing a horrible, horrible job of it, and at the same time putting it in line with his relationship. Welcome to the 90s, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, I kind of feel like he doesn't know what the word cumbersome means. I mean,
it sounded cool.
Yeah.
It sounded cool.
I would love to know what was the catalyst for him deciding to use the word cumbersome.
Jason Pollock's looking at him. Go with it, man. Just keep doing it.
The bitter taste is cumbersome. And him being like, this is becoming cumbersome for me. Well, then fucking move on. She's already told you she's done. You don't have to be here.
Take a load off, man.
Yeah. Take a load off, Jason. Take a load for free. Take a load off, Jason.
Put the load right on me.
God, yeah.
Mark, speaking of that, I watched a great movie the other night. I think I talked about it in the episode before. It's called Miami Connection. It's a Riff Tracks episode. It was fantastic. There were two band references from the band.
I've heard of the movie because I think they did it on How Did This Get Made?
They
or did, something.
And they said it was one of their favorite movies, and it's fantastic. But there were two Rick Danko references.
Oh shit!
In the movie by the Riff Tracks guys, it was absolutely fantastic.
We'll love Rick Danko.
Oh, he's the best. Yeah. So are we still going with this?
I mean, you know, the chorus is just again 10th grade poetry of this dichotomy thing of like, I'm too, you know, it's like the Goldilocks fucking effect. It's like too rich, too poor, too black, too white. I just can't do anything right, can I? And the woman is like, I'm asking you not to fucking text other women and say that you want to fucking bury your face in their tits. And he's like, God, I just can't do anything right. It's like, it comes off to me like he is like, I just can't be everything for you. And she is not asking for probably much. Now, I mean, I could be wrong here.
Mm-hmm.
She could be a real piece of shit.
I don't want to think that.
In almost all these, I side with the woman automatically.
I am anti-Fantana.
Especially after seeing this guy's fucking mustache. Yeah, I'm like, exactly. Yeah, I'm siding with the woman on this
me
one.
Me too, yeah.
Everything
about him says Southern shithead.
Yeah. So then we get...
So Mark, all of a sudden, he turns into Percy Blythe Shelley with the poetry right here in this fucking bridge. Oh my God.
Yeah, so we get this bass line that I like.
I hate.
I'm not saying that it's like a top 100 bass line in rock music or anything close to it, but I think that it's more interesting than just playing the root notes. That's all I'm saying. And the bass tone is decent.
The tone's good.
Then we get the bridge.
I think they give me a chance to say that. I think it's shit.
There is a balance between two worlds. One with an arrow and a cross. Regardless of the balance, life has become cumbersome. What did you just say?
How late into the night did he have to go when writing this song to go, the cross and the arrow. Hold on, that'll fit perfectly into the bridge. Hold on. How far into the writing of this song did he all of a sudden discover, you know, oh, one represents male, one represents female, and this is how I'm going to express it in the song.
So that is the arrow and the cross here, the sign for male and the sign for female.
Yeah, baby.
The the blue circle with the arrow coming off of it for men.
I'm saying that because
the circle with the pink, pink circle with the cross coming off of it.
Austin Powers wore the male symbol. And I'm letting that for the listener.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
He's
I like to take them into account every once in a while.
Yes, baby, you would say.
I'm throwing stones.
And I'm building up a wall,
Seth. You're burning bridges, goddammit.
with an ancient glance. God, what fucking absolute dog shit fucking lyrics.
We know it now. It's part of you. It's part of you, Mark. It's in your DNA.
So there is a balance between these two worlds. There's a balance between men and women. But regardless of this balance, life has become cumbersome. What the fuck does that mean? What does it mean that there's a balance between those two worlds? And what does it mean that that life is still cumbersome in regardless of the balance that you just talked about?
If a comparison is going to be drawn, the scales have to tip one way or another.
Yeah.
I mean,
because why are we talking about a balance if life still is cumbersome?
You have to recognize an imbalance in order for a weight to be applied.
Yeah.
I mean, I think. I'm no physicist. I'm no poet either, but neither is Jason.
No, he's not. Then we get another chorus. In case you couldn't remember all those differences. Too heavy, too light, too black or too white, too wrong or too right, today or tonight, cumbersome. Too rich or too poor, she's wanting me less, and I'm wanting her more. The bitter taste is, you guessed it, cumbersome. No, yeah. No, no, no. No, no, no. Yeah. No, 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 no. Yeah. Your life has become cumbersome. Really, really interesting ending here, because he's talking about his life.
Yes, interesting.
Then all of a sudden he's saying, your life has become cumbersome.
Mm.
Has it?
Puts the onus on me.
I mean, unless he's saying her life, but he keeps referring to her as her.
Mm.
So when he says your, it seems like he's pointing at the listener here.
I see him pointing his pick at the guy in the sound room. I see him doing that now.
Doing that thing. Yeah, yeah. The holding the pick. Yeah, oh, I was like picturing this. like with the middle finger.
You're right.
You know?
You're right. Yeah. That's what Jason would do. What would Jason do? That's what those bracelets mean.
WJD. What would Jason do? Oh, my Christ. I don't know why. I don't know if he's just trying to like make me feel like my life is cumbersome, too. Like I'm supposed to do that thing where I like put my hand on my chest and look over both of my shoulders as if to say, me? My life is cumbersome? The fuck did I do?
You were there for it.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. And then that's it. God, these lyrics are dumb. I mean, just chock full of supposed to be deep. Sounds dumb as hell. The music video is the band inside an open air bar. It reminds me of like Skipper's Smokehouse or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
There was this place, and it's a very Florida video. There was a place that was, you probably don't know about it, but it was there for a long time. Across from the Edison Mall, around the corner, there's like a little corner that you turn, and then it kind of faced to the north, which is a weird spot to be, because even if you were driving by and you're driving heading south, you couldn't have seen the place. But it was a bar that was in a building for a long time, and I can't remember the name of it, but it was there, and it looked like the bar they're playing in. What I mean by that is, in the video, there are these long sheets of tinsel behind the band and along the wall, and it's a very shitty-looking actual bar, the bar. And in the bar, there's an old guy sitting there drinking some, you know, not the greatest. He's definitely not drinking an IPA. This guy's probably drinking a Budweiser. Smoking a cigarette. Looks like he just got off his work at the sausage factory. There's some young people sitting at tables enjoying it. It looks like, it's really strange because I doubt that this was filmed in Florida, but it looks like a bar that we would have played at in the 90s in Florida. Like a bar I've played at in the 90s in Florida. Very much so. It really, really brought it home in a way. I mean, as much as I'm supposed to be captured by the depth of these lyrics, I was kind of struck, and I wasn't. I was really struck by the video and how much it reminded me of places that I played in Florida when I was younger.
Yeah, it reminded me of places my dad used to bring me or whatever. Like, because my dad...
I used to see your dad at Mulletville, and it had a Mulletville vibe. Yeah, yeah.
It definitely has a swampy Florida feel. You know, open air, but not on the water, it doesn't look like. I don't know. And just, like, a bunch of local yokels just sitting there and, like, jamming out and drinking one of those fucking pitchers of Bud Heavy that they bring you with, like, an ice pack in it. Mm-hmm. And they're just all fucking, you know, eating gator bites and fucking chicken wings and... living that Florida lifestyle. The music video section on the Wikipedia article for this says a stripped down performance video with little to no story concept or special effects.
That's correct.
Yeah. Not little to no. None. There is no story other than band playing music.
And good for them.
And I don't know that you can even call that a story or a concept. Yeah. I mean, it's just them. The drummer's drums that I will say had me like going, this guy looks like he doesn't know how to play drums. It's just the way his drums are set up just looks so elementary. It's like two rack toms up high. It's hard to explain if you're not a drummer, but looking at it, I was like, is this guy for real?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
I mean, the drum parts are
making
fine
your job harder.
It's just very, very strange. And no special effects other than like sepia tone, if you want to call that a special effect.
Yeah, there might have been a filter cast.
It revolves entirely around the band playing the song in a bar during the day.
And I'm happy about that.
Which is another Florida thing, bars during the day.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Creep factor.
I don't want to go there. Not yet.
Oh, okay.
And I don't want to go into depth on this. I'll make it quick. I just looked at song meanings for this song.
Okay.
There are people that have written a fucking thesis on this damn thing. And I've read a couple of them. They're hilarious. I don't want to go into it here, but if you'd like, maybe bring it up on the Facebook page.
You got to go into it at least. Give us one.
One of them, but it's really long.
I will say under song facts, there is one song fact about this, and that is it. And it just says, this is an interesting song about a troubled relationship between the singer and his significant other. He is in a desperate emotional state and probably not thinking clearly, which is why the lyrics suck out.
Definitely not thinking clearly.
Some of the symbolism in this song is pointing to this. Two worlds, one with an arrow and a cross, could refer to the symbols for male and female.
Maybe.
And that is the only thing that's on here about the song. Go ahead.
So I read a bunch of them, and this one kind of sums up what they're all about. Every single person on here that wrote something on Songfacts relates it to a relationship they had. I totally been in this place that the song describes. I was with a girl for 6 years before we broke up. And the last year we were together, I lost my job and had to move in with her, really depressed, gained some weight, all while she was going to medical school. Her life was going up. Mine was going down. She was annoyed with me all the time. I felt like a loser. Felt cumbersome. Maybe that is what the song's about. I don't know. I think he could have done a better job of describing it. I think this song is just about the awareness that you become a burden on someone or just the world in general. And this guy's doing a better job of communicating than Jason ever did.
I mean, if he's right, yeah.
If he's right. And there isn't really anything you can do to change that at the moment. Yes, you can. Resurrect those bridges with an ancient glass, but my old stone face can't seem to bring her down. I think this line relates to that feeling where you wish you could just turn back the clock. Well, I don't get that, dude. Even for a day, have the relationship that you used to have, be able to affect her the way. There is a lot of people describing their relationships in relation to the lyrics. I mean, and I take that back. They all seem to be doing just about as good a job as Jason is.
Well, I'm happy for them that they found something in this song that helped them heal or whatever. Good for them. I do not.
Yeah.
I don't.
But can we go to Creep Factor now?
Sure.
Let's end this shit. All right, Creep Factor. Well, I'd like to say that it's really creepy. I'd like to say that the guy looks creepy. In the video, the guy singing the song, Jason, that's the, not Jason Pollock, the other Jason. I can't remember his last name. Yeah, he looks creepy. That really shouldn't have any bearing on the lyrics. I suppose if I could understand what the hell was going on a little bit more, I could give it a higher creep rating, but just based on knowing that they're Southern and the mustache and and that he's trying to get something across. And it is creepy that he keeps bringing up Bible shit. And but it's not. I got to know more in order to give it a higher rating. He's probably irritating the shit out of this girl and not necessarily creeping her out. I give it like a four, a flat four.
Yeah. I think I'm going to go much lower than you.
Really?
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Creepy. No, whiny.
Very.
You know, he sounds, it's a little too ambiguous for me to know what it is that's going on here. You know, I know that he's, you know, asking for her, but it doesn't, you know, for her to reconsider, but it doesn't sound like he's being very forceful. It sounds like he's just kind of a fucking moron. I'll give it a 2.1.
Okay. That's probably what I should have given, but I don't know. Creepy. I don't know.
Yeah.
When I take the whole experience of recording this podcast with you today, I don't feel good about it. But it was kind of funny for a little while. I have a good time with you here, Mark.
I have a good time with you too, my friend.
This was fun. This was good.
It was a good one, yeah. Let's go ahead and keep the party going.
Weight of the other ones off of us for a minute there. Yeah. What's the next one? What are we doing?
We're going to do Kelly Clarkson, My Life Would Suck Without You.
Okay.
Kelly Clarkson's been popping up a lot for me lately.
Kelly Clarkson.
As famously yelled out when...
Was his name High Pitch Eric?
No. Well, I was thinking of the movie 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Oh.
When he gets waxed, he yells Kelly Clarkson. But she's been popping up specifically. I think it's called Kellyoke.
Okay.
Where she sings a bunch of different songs during her talk show. Okay. And does very, very good versions. Stay awake, Seth.
No. That was a hard one, Mark.
But yeah. It's
not the only one yawning in here, by the way.
No, I was calling you because you called me out, you little fuck. We've had this one on the list for a while, and I remember seeing it while I was looking up something else, and figured let's just go ahead and knock it out.
You independently put this one up. I've never looked at the lyrics. I don't think I've heard the song.
Yeah, I mean the song title alone should tell you just about. Everything you need to know with how deep these lyrics go.
Yeah.
So go ahead and listen to the lead single, My Life Would Suck Without You, by Kelly Clarkson. Anything you want to say? Clarkson. Anything you wanted to say before we end tonight?
This is Kelly Clarkson. Thank you so much for listening with us and listening to us deal with this very goofy situation. You've heard this song. You know what it's all about. Or you don't know what it's all about. I shouldn't say that. You know what it sounds like. It's been in your life. I'm glad that we could make light of what's going on. Hopefully shine a light on some of the awful, some of the terrible that you had to deal with along with us today. Thank you. I hope that you were entertained and not as annoyed as we were. Please go on the Facebook page. Please go on the Instagram page. Enjoy some time on there with us. Please send an email to lyrics2gopod@gmail.com. Send us some recommendations. Keep paying attention to the lyrics.
Yeah, please. Always. We beg of you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for everything you do, for sending stuff in, for sending in ideas, for interacting and liking even stuff on the Facebook group. We will be back next Monday to discuss My Life Would Suck Without You.
It would, Mark.
By Kelly Clarkson. On another episode of Lyrics to Go.
Wandered off.
Thanks a lot for listening. Our theme song was done by Exploding Pages. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for songs or lyrics, you can send them to lyrics2gopod@gmail.com. We'll be back here next week.